Hey, wake up. Make some more coffee. It's time for the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. And that show stars yours truly, Adam Lepp. They call me the Computer Guy because that's kind of what I'm known as around the station and many other places. And why am I called the Computer Guy? Well, I'm a guy, obviously. That part was easy, but I've been working with computers since the mid-70s. Yes, I was just a lad at the time, not quite that old. Anyway, I still work with computers in 2018, and will be doing so for the foreseeable future. And I'm also involved in this radio station as a manager and webmaster, producer, and a few other things. Bathroom cleaner from time to time, but I don't mind helping out just a little bit. Anyway, on this show, which we call the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, we talk today's top and trendy technology topics. You're welcome to email me, adam@wwgh1071.com, with questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, complaints, etc. Love to hear from listeners like yourself. You could even be on the show and talk about these topics with me, maybe if you disagree with one of my perspectives, because I am not shy about providing my opinion about stuff, especially things I feel strongly about, net neutrality being a recent thing that's come up. You can give me a call here at the station, 740-383-9944. Lots of ways to get involved. Of course, you can always leave a message on our Facebook page. If you're not already a fan and follower, please become one. WWGH 107.1, that's the place. We get new fans and followers every day because of all the great content that we offer. News at the top of the hour, messages from our valued supporters and underwriters, and previews of past, present, and future shows. Lots of great things happening here at WWGH Radio with much more to come. Coming up next hour, right after the 10 a.m. features, it is a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Professor being a good friend of mine and regular guest here on the station, Dr. Ronald Feynman, who hangs his hat in sunny and warm Boca Raton, Florida, will be discussing the State of the Union address provided by our beloved President Donald last week. The Democratic response from the over-chapsticked Joe Kennedy, and a few more things. So don't want to miss that. Linda Sims after 11, and now with Scott Spears right after the noon features. Waymo is accusing Uber of cheating to get ahead in the self-driving car race. We talk about ride-sharing services and their apps, Uber and Lyft being the two biggies here in the States. And Waymo, a autonomous vehicle company, well, they were in court yesterday. How's that for up-to-date news? In San Francisco, over a lawsuit that alleges that Uber used Waymo's existing autonomous vehicle technology to further its own development. During opening remarks, Waymo attorney Charles Verhoeven said evidence will show a scheme between Uber executives and a former Google engineer to bring proprietary technology to Uber. Now, Waymo was formerly a division within Google. It later spun off into its own company under Alphabet, which is the umbrella company that's now over Google. The investigation into potential trade secret theft began in late 2016, when Waymo accidentally received an email from a supplier containing an attachment that detailed Uber's LiDAR circuit board. Waymo claimed it looked suspiciously like its own design. Now, the trial started yesterday before Judge William Alsup. Press, attorneys, and spectators packed the courthouse. Not surprisingly, this is getting a lot of coverage, and it's quite important. And, you know, Google, they've got a lot of money. A trial should take about 2 weeks. Verhoeven, again, that would be Waymo's attorney, Charles Verhoeven, said, "This is about two competitors where one competitor decided they needed to win at all costs. Losing was not an option. He argued that Uber executives, including their former CEO, Travis Kalanick, who resigned, were aware that Anthony Lewandowski, previously a Google engineer, brought trade secrets to Uber. Waymo alleged that Lewandowski stole 14,000 files containing secret self-driving car data from Google before abruptly quitting to start a new company. Lewandowski funded a self-driving truck company called Otto 2 years ago. Uber then bought Otto for $680 million in August of 2016. The evidence is going to show a trail of a knowing effort to induce Mr. Lewandowski from Waymo, take the trade secret tech he'd already developed, and bring it to Uber, according to attorney Verhoeven. During their opening remarks, Uber lawyers distanced the company from Lewandowski, telling jurors that he is no longer with the company. He was fired from Uber in May of 2017 after failing to cooperate with Uber. Uber's attorney, Bill Carmody, said Uber regrets even bringing Lewandowski on board. For all his time at Uber, all Uber has to show for Lewandowski is this lawsuit. Uber's lawyer read an email from a Google engineer to Waymo attorneys in October of 2016 during their investigation. It said the technology that Lewandowski took from Waymo is not critical for its self-driving efforts. The email said it's all electronics designs, schematics, and PCB layouts, and the company component library for their creation. It was considered low value enough that we considered hosting it off Google infrastructure. Now, of course, Uber denied using proprietary Waymo technology and said it has only used its own technology in developing self-driving cars. Attorney Carmody from Uber said Waymo feared that its rival would hire top talent from the robotics and autonomous car industry. Now, jurors must decide whether Uber knowingly used these trade secrets to develop self-driving cars. Attorney Carmody said in his opening statement, "I want to tell you right up front, it didn't happen. There's no conspiracy, there's no cheating." Before proceedings began, Judge Alsup said no one would be getting special treatment in the trial. Someone who has a witness who thinks he's important wanted a private room. No, he said without naming anyone specific. No one on either side gets a private room just because they're famous. Waymo CEO John Krafcik testified yesterday. Uber former CEO Travis Kalanick is also expected to testify later this week and is on the witness list for both parties. Lewandowski is also on the prospective witness list. He was ordered to turn over documents and other information related to the case in March. However, he exercised his Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination. So some interesting and stressful times over at Uber and Waymo. We'll keep you posted on this case. It certainly will be interesting and affects technology and the entire world in many different ways. Adam Lepp here. Good morning. Thank you for listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. News and views from the world of technology on the Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM, and broadcasting online by the power and magic of the internet at WWGH1071.com. So how much time do you spend on Facebook? Hopefully part of your Facebooking is spent looking at the WWGH pages, where we post previews of upcoming shows, information on our hosts and hostesses, some station updates. We've been posting a lot of news updates lately, getting some breaking headlines before, honestly, any other station provides that news. Also, we invite your feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, good and bad. So Facebook certainly has its use, especially if you're on our Facebook page, probably one of the best Facebook pages out there. But of course, that would be a very biased opinion. Now, a few days ago, the social media industry had some statistics that were released. And due to these statistics, they may have to rethink some of their methods and strategies. There are signs that usage of social media may have reversed course. That is, people are spending less time on Facebook and LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and all that stuff. Now, this decline may have something to do with Facebook's efforts to recover from accusations that it has provided fertile grounds for fake news. Mark Zuckerberg, their main person over there, in January, promised to steer Facebook toward refocusing on the user experience. Now, Zuckerberg stunned the industry during Facebook's fourth quarter earnings announcement, which recently took place, saying that while they remained profitable, recent changes to shift the platform's focus away from news toward more meaningful interactions with friends and family had resulted in users spending 50 million less hours per day on the site. So they're removing some of this news, which may or may not be fake, and going toward the main focus they had when they started many years ago, but losing user hours in the process. Bit ironic, I would say. So what would be another way of looking at that statistic? Well, daily active users in the United States and Canada fell by 700,000 from the third to the fourth quarter. That's according to their chief financial officer, David Wehner. That's quite a bit. News and video always will be a big part of Facebook, but they don't want that type of passive viewing to alter the overall experience for the social media user. And Mark Zuckerberg said that during this conference call. Said, "Now, as I made clear announcing these changes, I expect the time people spend on Facebook and some measure of engagement will go down as a result. But I also expect the amount we actually interact with each other to go up over time. The decision to alter the type of video Facebook focuses on in order to increase interaction led to a reduction overall of, check this out, 50 million hours per day, or 5%. That's quite a bit. And that was during the fourth quarter of 2017. However, what does that do to revenue? Well, not as much as you might expect. Facebook reported 47% revenue growth for 2017. That means that their revenue was $40 billion. 1.4 billion daily active users. Now, that's more than four times the population of the United States. So, again, Facebook is big worldwide. And that's a 14% increase from 2016. Now, Facebook had been under fire by critics since the 2016 election due to the proliferation of fake news by Russian troll bots and the seemingly slow response by Zuckerberg in recognizing how problematic this was. Facebook has made big strides in improving the integrity of the news feed, according to Mark Zuckerberg, with about 14,000 people working across community and online operations and security. That's double the amount from a year ago. New technology to flag suicidal posts has resulted in first responders reaching 100 people in need of help. And Facebook's artificial intelligence systems resulted in 99% of Al-Qaeda or ISIS-related content being taken down before it was even flagged by users. So some good results also. But again, it's a complicated situation. And Facebook, pretty much how Facebook goes, that's how a lot of other things go in this world. Mark Zuckerberg conceded that Facebook was willing to accept some reduction in hours spent on the site in the interest of a better user experience. That comes from Rick Edmonds from Pointer. That's spelled P-O-Y-N-T-E-R. He said, "I think that will be good for the company in the long run. Publishers have been seeing reduced traffic even before the recent announcements of paring down the public portion of Newsfeed. While it's tricky to pin down exactly what led to the lower engagement numbers, they might be due to Facebook's shift away from news and general saturation in the social media marketplace." And that comes from Kevin Kruel from Tyrios Research. And we quote him and his colleagues at Tyrios quite often because they're pretty good at this stuff. Anyway, he said, "With the negative talk around fake news on Facebook and the competition from other social media, it's not surprising that people are starting to limit their time on Facebook." Kevin Kruel cited President Trump's favorite platform, Twitter, as an example. "Perhaps the only way Facebook can recover in the long term would be to buy a rival site like Twitter." Of course, they've also bought Instagram and some others, but now he's pondering buying Twitter. I wonder what the Donald would think about that. Anyway, Facebook may have reached the limits of its organic growth cycle. And according to an expert, Kevin Kruel from Tyrios Research. So Facebook buying Twitter, that would be quite interesting. Now, Facebook faces a more fundamental problem than the ones company officials have talked about. That comes from media research analyst Mark Mulligan. He says, "What is looming is an Instagram problem, or more precisely, a messaging app problem. Messaging apps accounted for 7.7 billion monthly active users last year, up from 6.6 billion in 2016, 5.5 billion in 2015. Instead of playing defense, Facebook decided to disrupt itself to the point where they own 49% of the global market share of that space and 77% of Facebook's total audience now uses at least one global messaging app. The problem is that nobody has figured out exactly how to monetize those apps, which means Facebook will face lower advertising yield as its members increasingly go to them," according to expert Mark Mulligan. So they have all this market share, but not making money from it. Well, that's interesting. Wayne Kurtzman is from IDC, another expert. Here's what he has to say. "Facebook has been showing an increase in monthly and daily active users as well as ad revenue, so a drop in usage time is not that worrisome." He said, "If users have a better experience, find more value, and engage in more relevant ads, the time on platform metric will be less significant. If their experience is noticeably poorer, there is a lot of competition that will try and pick up the traffic." So some interesting statistics and developments over at Facebook, and we keep you updated on that stuff here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. You've probably heard of the Alexa, the smart software that powers the Echo line of smart speakers. Well, what is Amazon up to? Because they're the company behind these fancy-dancy high-tech products. Well, they've introduced new functionality, which enables Alexa, the virtual assistant, to send and receive SMS text messages on devices running Android 5.0 or higher. Now, Alexa, again, the software that powers the Echo smart speakers, not smart speakers, but it is kind of early, so Got to get the mouth working properly. Anyway, Alexa can play and send personalized messages from contacts for users who have set up voice profiles. Users will hear a chime when they have a new text message and see a yellow light ring on their Echo device. They'll also be notified in the Alexa app. Now, this SMS or text messaging feature is not available for the Apple, the iOS mobile operating system, because Apple does not share its messaging application production interface, or API, with third parties. And Apple is proprietary about their software, and this is where it might be biting them. Anyway, this feature currently is available only here in the good old United States. Text to 911, group messages, and multimedia messaging, that is sending an attachment, like a photo, are not supported. Now, to use this new SMS feature, users first have to sign up for Alexa calling and messaging in the Alexa app. Send an SMS message through an Echo device. You go to Conversation, select Contacts, then My Profile, enable Send an SMS, accept the Android OS permission, and tell Alexa to send an SMS to the recipient. That doesn't sound too complicated. Users can disable the Send SMS feature through their contact card in the Alexa app. Rob Enderle, expert in these kind of things, and we quote him fairly often, he said Amazon, who failed with smartphones, is trying to move their digital assistant into the communications space. It's a long-term strategy, and it appears that they're executing the old embrace, extend, extinguish strategy that Microsoft executed to displace Lotus 1-2-3. Do you remember Lotus 1-2-3? My goodness, I do, and that goes quite a ways back. Kind of fun to talk about new stuff, people's perspectives on them, and also reminisce a bit about the old days. And, of course, old days could be 10 or 15 years ago for computers. Anyway, Rob Enderle said this is the embrace stage. They anticipate people increasingly using their Echoes to communicate and control things, rendering smartphones redundant. Teaming up with Android is a competitive move. That's according to Cindy Zhu, principal analyst at Constellation Research. She said competition in the smart home voice-enabled device battle is increasing with Google Home, Apple HomePod, and Microsoft Cortana, Harman Kardon. Google Home devices enable text messaging to phones, so adding this feature helps Amazon compete. Sound system maker Harman Kardon offers Invoke, an intelligent speaker that uses Microsoft's Cortana virtual assistant. It's possible that Amazon has an even larger goal, according to Rob Enderle. They want to be the only device you depend on to communicate. The more success Amazon has here, the more folks will question their need for a smartphone. Like a chess fork, according to Rob Enderle, the tie-in with Google will put Amazon in a win-win situation. Even if its push into SMS does not displace smartphones, the move will strengthen its connections to its customers. He said communication is engagement, and the firm that owns that change owns a trusted link into buying behavior. This is critical to regaining and growing its customer base. Now, Rob Enderle said Apple's HomePod is no threat, and the lack of SMS capability for the iOS is no problem for Alexa. HomePod has a number of problems, not the least of which is excessive cost and being significantly behind Amazon. Apple really isn't taking this threat seriously, which may allow Amazon to do to it what it did to BlackBerry, Palm, and Microsoft. Remember the Palm. Now, BlackBerry is essentially still around, but certainly not what it was 15 years ago. The Palm, well, it was a good product for its time, but really, I don't think anybody under about 25 would think it's anything other than part of your hand. But, you know, we older folks and that we mean 30, 35 or older, which isn't that old. No, the POM refers to the personal assistant, the PDA, the POM pilot, and some other products. Anyway, Alexa's new SMS capability is being overhyped, according to another person we quote often, Michael Jude from Straightcast Frost and Sullivan. He said accessing the feature for most will be more trouble than it's worth, since Alexa interactions are still kind of clunky. He said Alexa works for simple instructions, but for more complicated interactions like this, most people will not bother. It's far easier simply to use the SMS functionality on the smartphone. The SMS feature will add to the perceived utility of the Amazon offering, but will ultimately be of limited use unless it's improved over time. The Jude rule is, Michael Jude has his own rule, but again, he's a smart dude, so I would definitely take into account what he says. The Jude rule is, people evaluate a purchase on the basis of all the features they get, but then only use 10% of them. That's about right. You only use a small part of what a piece of software can do. Just think of how much functionality from Excel or Word that you use. I doubt I use more than 10%, especially for Excel. Word, maybe 25%, but there are things that it does that either are beyond the scope of what I normally need, or I honestly don't really understand it or find it complicated, or there's a better program for some of these tasks. But again, Michael Jude is saying 10%, and honestly, I tend to agree with it. Adam Lepp here with news and views from the world of technology on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and Chase. Three very large companies. They are banding together. And you might ask, well, why are they doing that? Well, it is to provide health care for their 1.1 million employees. They plan to form a company, quote, free from profit-making incentives and constraints in order to improve employee satisfaction with their health care coverage as well as reduce costs. This company initially will focus on technology solutions that provide U.S. employees and their families with simplified, high-quality, and transparent health care at a reasonable cost. Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett said, "The ballooning costs of health care act as a hungry tapeworm on the American economy. Our group does not come to this problem with answers, but we also do not accept it as inevitable. Rather, we share the belief that putting our collective resources behind the country's best talent can, in time, check the rise in health costs while concurrently enhancing patient satisfaction and outcomes." According to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, the companies are keenly aware of the difficulties in front of them. "Hard as it might be," he said, "reducing healthcare's burden on the economy while improving outcomes for employees and their families would be worth the effort. Success is going to require talented experts, a beginner's mind, and a long-term orientation." Now, the healthcare initiative, again, set up by Berkshire Hathaway, Amazon, and J.P. Morgan Chase, could reach beyond their employees, according to J.P. Morgan Chairman Jamie Dimon. "The three of our companies have extraordinary resources, and our goal is to create solutions that benefit our U.S. employees, their families, and potentially all Americans." Now, still in the beginning stages, the healthcare initiative will be led by Todd Combs, an investment officer of Berkshire Hathaway, Marvell Sullivan Birchtold, a managing director of Chase, and Beth Galletti, a senior VP at Amazon. Now, the details are just in the beginning stages. They really have not been finalized yet. But this initiative has the potential to disrupt the healthcare industry. Charles King is from Pundit. We quote him often, and he's a pretty smart dude. He said, "Since the three together have over a million employees, potential solutions could range from simply leveraging those numbers to gain for favorable rates from HMOs to more aggressive moves like creating their own network of caregivers. Right now, he said, everything's on the table. Patty Padmanabhan from Damo Consulting said, if the new entity does throw the weight of its employee base around, it could hurt the balance sheets of those in the market. The new company will likely be a big buyer of healthcare products and services with pricing leverage that can hurt the profit margins of existing healthcare players. Now, Amazon's technology prowess also could change the market for existing players. That comes to mind when you say, well, what does this have to do with technology? Well, quite a bit when Amazon is one of those three companies. Anyway, we quoted Patty Padmanabhan earlier, and he said it's clear that healthcare consumerism is on the rise, and there's a need for better user experiences. Now, with Amazon, a revolutionary company in many ways, but of course they're known for their intuitive customer interfaces, use of advanced analytics, and negotiating power with suppliers in the e-commerce space. They'll likely use these skills to disrupt the markets for healthcare products and services. One motive driving these companies is the desire to make employees healthier. That comes from Jack Gold, principal analyst at J. Gold Associates. He said what they're trying to do here is establish a program that lowers cost by making people healthier and using technology to do that. If we can make people healthier, insurance costs should go down because they won't be in doctors' offices so often. Michael Cannon is from the Cato Institute. He says while the Amazon and Friends venture could disrupt the healthcare market and increase competition, it still won't address the fundamental problems with the industry. Healthcare needs more than competition. It needs reform. It's going to be hard for Amazon and the others to have a transformative impact on healthcare because they're fighting perverse incentives baked into federal law. Without reforming those perverse incentives, there is very little good that entrepreneurs can do. He said those perverse incentives are due to the fact that everyone is spending someone else's money, so there's no incentive to control costs. He said if Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and J.P. Morgan Chase were to succeed despite the challenging circumstances, their 1.1 million employees could benefit. But I don't think it can benefit other consumers in the healthcare system without fundamental reform. So, novel idea, healthcare collaboration, keep costs down and make the experience better for their employees. 1.1 million total between Berkshire Hathaway, Chase, and Amazon. Interesting concept. I kind of like the idea. Let's see what materializes. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy with my twice weekly radio show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Let's talk about Elvis, not the late great singer who performed Jailhouse Rock, Kentucky Rain, and hundreds of other classic tunes. Elvis, this Elvis, is only 3 feet tall and wears decorative stars. And this Elvis's job really isn't quite as interesting as a singer or movie actor. When a guest at the Renaissance Hotel in Las Vegas needs a toothbrush or an extra towel, Elvis brings it to his or her room. Now, Elvis is a robot. Now, while Elvis does not replace any Homo sapiens who are working at the Renaissance Hotel currently, it is a sign of the future for Las Vegas. In January, Las Vegas hosted the Consumer Electronics Show, which we've talked about a few times. It's one of the largest technology shows in the whole world. Things displayed there self-driving cars, cleaning robots, and artificial intelligence-powered systems offered a peek into the city's own automated future. But, somewhat ironically, Las Vegas is also the U.S. city most at risk for losing jobs to automation, according to a study from the University of Redlands. In fact, in 20 years, almost two-thirds of Las Vegas's jobs could be automated. Most Las Vegas workers have low-paid service positions like cashiers, office clerks, and cleaning staff. They work in restaurants, hotels, and offices. Their daily routines often involve repetitive tasks, which may very well be replaced by automation. For example, there are 39,000 retail salespeople in Las Vegas. 36,000 of them could technically be automated by 2035, according to the study. Cashier, cook, and game dealer jobs could be automated almost entirely. How many positions actually end up automated depends on things like cost and, of course, if customers accept that change. So what will happen when the jobs in Las Vegas are gone? According to Professor Johannes Menius, who worked on the University of Redlands study, we expect an incredible amount of increase in income inequality. We'll likely have an oversupply of people without education. Some of them we can train and some we can't. They'll have to go into early retirement. Now, Black and Hispanic workers are more at risk to lose their jobs to automation than white employees, according to Professor Menius, because women are more likely to work in the types of jobs at risk for automation. They will be affected disproportionately also. The biggest determining factor will be education. People with a doctoral degree only have a 13% chance of being replaced by robots and artificial intelligence, while people with only a high school degree have a 74% chance, according to the study. We are not Luddites. You're not going to stop technology, said D. Taylor, president of the National Unite Here Union and former head of the Las Vegas Culinary Union. Instead, Taylor is focused on negotiating contracts to include training that helps workers transition to different jobs and severance with health and retirement benefits if people lose their careers to automation. I think this is a new industrial revolution that certainly on public policy has not been thought out enough, according to D. Taylor, president of the National Unite Here Union and former head of the Las Vegas Culinary Union. Now, retraining takes time. Instead of waiting for people to lose their jobs, cities and businesses may need to invest in retraining immediately and then come up with plans for people who cannot make the transition. For example, older employees. The robot revolution may be closer than many in Las Vegas realize. According to Professor Menius, the real impact will hit the city in 5 to 10 years. Automation is already taking jobs, but not enough to have any real impact on employment numbers. McDonald's and other food chains have kiosks for ordering. Silicon Valley company Nightscope makes robots that replace security guards with mixed results. So, a robot as a security guard is an interesting concept, but is it as safe and effective as a human being? Savioki, the maker of Elvis, again, this 3-foot-tall robot working in Las Vegas, has its relay robots in hotels across the country. And as you've probably heard, Amazon just opened their first grocery store without any cashiers. Now, Las Vegas has grappled with this automation issue many times, long before anyone imagined that cars could drive themselves. Now, back when slot machines only took coins, people roamed casino floors making change. Now, relatively simple technology, from poker machines to ATMs, have replaced various gaming jobs over the years. Even if locals do end up struggling to find work, Las Vegas will likely carry on as a tourist attraction for outsiders who have jobs and can afford vacations. Professor Mania said, Vegas will still be Vegas to what characterizes Vegas will still be the same. You will see fewer people face-to-face in the service sector, but Cirque du Soleil will still be there. So, automation, robots in Las Vegas, that certainly is interesting, and we talk about that stuff here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, the latest and greatest in technology, and of course, peppered with frequent wisecracks from yours truly, as I'm not one to shy away from an opinion, and that's what's so great about radio. I say what's on my mind. If you don't agree with me, that's wonderful. We don't need you to. In fact, oftentimes, if there is a little controversy, that is part of the fun and part of not just the immediacy, but part of the charm and the advantage of actually having live radio with hosts that have been in a field that they talk about for a long time. I've been in IT professionally for about 21 years, and I've been working with computers since the mid-70s. So I think I'm pretty much in a position to discuss the types of things that we ponder here on the show, but I always keep my eyes, ears, and every single brain cell open, because even I can learn a few things. And that's why I do the show, because it's a lot of fun. And again, not only do I tickle the brain cells of you as a listener, but I tickle a few of my own, probably more than I realize. So what else is in the technology news? There is a new grocery store where everything sells for $3 or less, kind of a take on the Dollar Tree and similar concepts. Now, this $3 or less grocery store specializes in organic, GMO-free foods. It's called Brandless. New take on generic. Well, it's just called Brandless. It's an online grocery store. Not everything is organic and fair trade, but a huge amount of what they sell is. The foods, according to the people that reviewed these items, were every bit as good as the kinds that you'd find at a place like Whole Foods. But the packaging is zero frills. No fancy packaging, just the goods inside. And that's where the savings comes in, according to the founders. They don't sell brand names, which saves them the brand tax that can drive up prices. Well, shipping is a $9 flat fee, unless you purchase $72 or more, in which case it's free. They donate one meal to Feeding America every time you head to the checkout. So, good concept. Looking at the packaging, it's very plain, but who cares? You don't eat the packaging. So I think a lot of this stuff is actually very good. Adam the Computer Guy here with my twice-weekly radio show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. As I mentioned, we do stimulate brain cells here. That's the purpose of the show. If you have a question, concern, comment, complaint, or other insider perspective on something I've talked about, please get in touch. You could even be on the air with me talking about these technological tidbits and trends. But your opinion, regardless of whether or not it's something that I might agree with. Actually, many times an opinion I don't agree with is the best kind. Send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com. We talk about rideshare services. Well, how about bike share services? Let's go south a little bit where it's not quite as wintry as it is here, to Dallas, Texas. Well, they suddenly have the largest bike share network in the United States, but the growth of this network has triggered a backlash in a city with little history of bicycling, with more than 20,000 bicycles. Dallas's fleet dwarfs those of traditional bike hotspots like Portland, Oregon, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Washington, D.C., and of course, the Big Apple, New York City. Dockless bicycles, which don't have to be returned to a station or locked to a bike rack, began appearing on streets in August. The dockless companies won over the local government, and this is in Dallas, Texas, with a promise to operate without any cost to taxpayers. The number of bikes continued to grow in the fall, most notably in November, when Ofo, a Chinese bike share company, also launched in Dallas. But now Dallas is planning regulations that will restrict the number of bicycles and where they can be parked. It's also threatened to start confiscating neglected bikes. Since September, they've received 800 complaints about these bicycles. Jared White, who manages alternative transportation in the Dallas Department of Transportation, said some of the bikes are left for days, weeks, or months, in some cases without being moved. Earlier this year, pranksters sawed one bike in half and mounted it to a telephone pole. Another bicycle was set on fire. Some have been thrown in lakes and rivers. Lime bikes, Dallas version of roadkill, one business posted on its sign. One neighborhood banned the bikes altogether. Fran Badgett, owner of Transit Bicycle Company in Dallas, said it's making people a little bit hostile. From my front door, you can see about 200 bikes. Not a single one is parked in a way I'd call respectful or helpful. So it's certainly a good idea, but not really carried out as well as they were hoping. And ride share, bike share, certain things sound great, but the actual execution may be a different story. Adam Lepp here, closing out the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. News and views from the world of technology, obligatory wisecracks, and, of course, always a surprise or two. Thank you so much for listening. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.